Mai ki Pauherengatai, ko Jace Taylor aho. In this episode of Pauherengatai, I travelled to Horeke, a small settlement on the upper reaches of the picturesque Hokianga Harbour, a place steeped in history from times past. Here you will find the Mangungu Mission House and one end of the Pauherengatai Twin Coast Cycle Trail. I met with Mita Harris, born and raised in Hokianga. Mita is a director at Heritage New Zealand. His mahi focuses on archaeological authority processing and advocacy for Māori heritage across Aotearoa. For 15 years, he worked for the Department of Conservation, and he appreciates nature and all things associated with it, especially a Māori view on the future. We sat on the balcony of Mangungu looking across the harbour on a tranquil Ngāhuru autumn day. At times, a light breeze gently coming off the harbour could be felt and heard, but on this day, Hokianga was in full glory. Tēnā koe, Mita, ngā mihi o te rā. Nau mai ki tēnei uiui a Pauherengatai. Kōrero hia mai ki au e pāna i a koe. A, he aha ou whakapapa?
Mihi atu. Kia koe ahoa. Ko Mita tōku ingoa no Hokianga hau, Hokianga whakapau karakia, te kāinga huitoia ki ngā hapū me koe anō e Ngāti Toro, ngā iwi i tēnei Hokianga whakapau karakia, ngā puhi. Nō reira, tēnā koutou, kia rau iwi tātou.
I wanted to start off by asking you about the significance of this place and the significance of it here in the Hokianga, and if you could tell me, you know, a little bit about the history here.
In all times, I guess it started many, many years ago, but more specifically to this place, I just want to make a mention of a hapu, koutou kāinga. Te ngahe ngahe is just to our west, and more towards our east is Te Pōpoto, and then further on through the northeast is Ngāti Toro, me Ngāti Hau, which if you're looking east from Mangungu, kind of a little bit northern, northeast, it's sort of in the valley, and those hapu, Ngāti Toro and Ngāti Hau, make their way towards the top at Okaiho near Lake Omāpere, and Te Onioni is further on top, just beyond Te Pōpoto. So those are the hapu that are in our area, and they're old hapu. They've been here for a very long time. And this, I guess the significance more recently in here at Mangungu is the signing of Te Tiriti on the 12th of February in 1840, when it came over from Waimate Mission Station with Governor Hobson and a few of his fellow missionaries. And we're going to make our way up the river towards the east just a bit later on to be at the site where the meeting took place before Hobson jumped into the river on a waka or a boat, I think, that was supplied to him with his entourage. And he made his way from just looking east here down the Waiho River and then through here to Mangungu, to Horeke, and arrived here on the 11th, and the missionaries made a bit of room for him in the whare, and some slept outside. Wasn't super flash for a lieutenant governor of the time, but you know, it was what it was, and the call came out for other parts of Hokianga, and you can see just in front of us, it's like State Highway 1, a very, very wide autobahn, if you like. So that gave Hokianga the many nooks and crannies of Hokianga, the hapu and whānau, the opportunity to jump on their waka and congregate here. So eventually they, between 2,000 and 3,000 tangata from all parts of the Hokianga gathered here in Horeke, mainly down in Horeke, where they could park up. But on the 12th, well, certainly on the night of the 11th, the corridor sort of started. And back in those times, I guess they would have been up, you know, all night having this talk. You know, Te Ao Wairua, the spiritual world, would have been a huge part of that conversation, and the physical world, Te Ao Tūro, would have been a huge part of that conversation as well. So the two mixing together to look at this, I guess, this new document and this new way of thinking and sovereignty and economics and social and all those sorts of things were talked about, their future, the uri that was to come. And those conversations took place here on the frontier. The following day, quite early in the morning, they started to have their kōrero. And if you read the minutes from the, well, the facsimile from the kōrero, there was a person there recording it. There was all sorts of conversations from, you know, don't sign to let's sign, you know, Waitangi signed. So there was all those sorts of things going on. And in the end, they decided to sign. And more, I think it was between 60 and 70 chiefs of high rank signed here. So more people signed here than anywhere else in the country. So it's significant for Hokianga that that happened here. And it was the third signing. You had a couple of influential chiefs then of the time. You had Patawini and Tamati Wakanini, who hail from just up the river here towards the east in Waiho, Ngāti Hau descent. Their daddy's still buried there in the hills at home. And incidentally, he was the first ariki, I guess, to meet face-to-face with Captain Cook as he came into the, you know, near Matauri Bay, near the Crevalli Islands. Back in that time. So, and he's, their daddy's buried up there, and they were born and bred just up in here until they moved away. So they were quite influential. And then you had other significant chiefs around Hokianga too. So it would have been the conversations, I think back then, would have been all over the place, you know. It wouldn't have been just easy sailing, and it's still not easy sailing right up until today. You know, that's a lot of years later on that we're still having this conversation, trying to sort ourselves out.
This place for you must be a significant area, because I know this is you know, a place where you were brought up, you were raised in the Hokianga, and in particular probably further up the harbour. What was it that captured you as a young man that led you to want to understand the history of your people and this area in particular?
Yes, I was. I was brought up just up the valley here, a little place called Hutoia. It's just off Rahari settlement, Ngāti Toro, with Dad's whānau. Mum and Dad were next door to each other, so two hapu next door. But the interesting and funny thing is that hapu never necessarily married in recent times, so we're a sort of product of a very few, I suppose, whakapapa whānaus that sort of married into the neighbouring hapu. So that was up in the valley here. So distance, but really close, side by side. And I think being brought up here was a big thing for me. Was the just the landscapes were big for me being brought up here. The freedom. The waterways here in Hokianga and Horeke. I spent a bit of my life with my grandmother here in Horeke, and the hapus are all quite close. You know, we all used to be one, but we just got too big, Te Pōpoto, and it all split up into different, you know, Ngāti Toro, Ngāti Hau, and so on. So we are all one whānau, moving between here and there. It's never too far away. But it was definitely the landscapes and hearing, I guess, some of the old stories from the old people. You know, when we were young in the 70s and in the 80s, we still had kaumātua kuikui that were full-blooded Māori. that were old, that some were born in the late 1800s, and they would have been brought up, and they still had characteristics that they would continually do, living in Kota. Characteristics of living in Niko Whare, living in Kota and living like that, pulling wood on sledges. I can remember my grandmother, fire was a big thing, you know, fire was everything, fire was life. And I can remember summer, winter, all the four seasons of the year, the fire would be going in some way or another, whether it's burning rubbish or keeping it going to keep the water boiling just in case someone came to visit. There was hot water there all the time. The limitation of power. I was talking to someone the other day about after the fire had gone down in the evening, sort of a big block of wood was put on, and that was burnt down to it. It was quite chunky embers, and then that was all scooped out and put into a large aluminium pot and brought into the room as a heater, and that sat on some wood. And I think about it now, and I think, gosh, that could have been dangerous. But that's that transition from, I think, from Niko Whare, of not burning open fires in Niko Whare in case it caught fire. But the embers were fair game to sort of bring them in to take the cold off the edge at night time. So those sort of things. And fishing as well was a big part of this part of the world. Fishing and eeling, you know, right up until the 70s and the even the 80s, actually, I can remember, you know, to complement the income, you know, eeling and fishing and pig hunting were, and bottling, you know, preserving, those sort of things were still being done. And you would have seen on your way down, or our way down here today, are still a lot of peaches on the side of the road that aren't being picked.
Aye.
So the amount of kai that's left on the sides of the roads are, you know, they probably back in those times, they probably the trees would have been stripped bare to take them home to bottle.
Mm.
But now, of course, you know, it's probably cheaper to buy canned peaches or preserved peaches and jams, you know, from the shop. It's just cheaper to do that than it is to go through their process of picking and preserving for the winter months.
There's nothing like a fresh peach off the tree, though. I know there's tributaries that come into the Hokianga Harbour, and I'm really keen to understand more about those. Can you tell me a bit about what they mean to the people out here and the stories that come along those rivers?
Yeah, you know, when I've been brought up on, and this, you know, everyone that's been brought up on a papa kāinga close to home knows that, you know, no matter what, I can remember being brought up summertime, you know, all the cousins would come home for Christmas up at Forest Road, just up in Waiho there, Whakanekeneke. And I guess, you know, no matter what we did, you never got hurt. You never got lost in the bush. You know, I can remember as kids swimming across floods, and you sort of think, gosh, that's a stupid thing to do. You wouldn't let your children do that today. It's just not well. But you know, that kaitiakitanga, because you're from there, you know, the safety of your mere existence is with faith in the land of where you come from. As long as, you know, you live your life and you don't upset things too much, you know, you can be guaranteed in your faith that things are going to be safe. So in that upper harbour, we have a few of, well, even in here, we have a few of Araituru and Niniwa's children, Taniwha. Just across the way here is Orira, just through the gap there, just north.
Right.
North, as you're sitting on the balcony at Mangungu, and you line up the church with the balcony, he sits there, and just around the corner here, we cross the bridge.
Aye.
And you've got Wairere, you know, another Taniwha there. And then you've got Waiho, further up by us, you know, who hangs out in the valley there. And then across over here, you've got Mangamukura, and of course Waimar just around the corner, those Taniwha. So to those people, I say me more at this end, not so much down here, they have different kaitiaki down this place. You know, you have those sorts of... I guess things from Te Ao Wairua, the spiritual part of Te Ao Māori, are still with us today, you know, still caring, still warning of things to come. And every hapu around the country would have those sorts of things. They've all got their special taniwha that have special jobs. And I was down at Gisborne yesterday, and we had a beautiful story from Kaitiaki whānau member from there talking having the same conversation that we're having, and telling us about the many a Kaitiaki down at Tai Rāwhiti, and there are many of them, but that's right throughout the country, you know. All hapu have their own story about that. So yeah, to us it was a safe place, you know, having that faith, as long as we didn't upset things too much. It was, yeah, it was always safe.
And so you speak of the names of the taniwha around the moana, yet it concerns me that visitors to this place may not understand the depth of the history here beyond a monocultural lens. To me, it's important now more than ever that we take every opportunity to celebrate our shared history, to educate and appreciate what once was. Let's talk about the kupu ingoa, the name Hokianga. E mohio ana koe ki te māramatanga o tēnei kupu?
I suppose it's the returning of kupu, but also, you know, as you get older, you learn, you pick up different things from different parts of the Hokianga, different hapu, and they all have their, you know, Hokianga hakapō karakia. And it's only in recent times, as you get older, you know, as you experience different things in your life, I suppose, and it has a, I suppose, a very strong, to me, a very strong connection to, you know, our iho ngā mano and mingā anahira pono. For us in Hokianga, I see it like that. I see it as a footstool. That Iho has chosen in his time when he's ready, along with the faithful angels, especially out towards those people near Mitimiti and Omāpere and Opunhoni, Arauturu, Taniwha, Koutou Me, Koe Me, Niniwa, all in that area here. So it's a I suppose for me, that's the way I see from my end of town. I say my end of town, my maunga, my awa, from my view where I stand, and I look towards my whanaunga, further towards the west of the heaviness that they that we all have, but more so themselves towards that te ao wairua, matua tama wairua tapu, mingā anahira puno me te māngai ai.
If those foundations that were laid with tupuna, you know, all those years ago, and like you said earlier, it's hard to understand what was going through their minds at that time.
Yep.
What would it have been like before? You know, what would it have been like here when our tupuna were walking? You know, the forest, the abundance of wildlife. Oh. I want to talk about the wildlife because, you know, the Hokianga is a beautiful ecosystem, if you could you could say. What is the significance of the wildlife out here for you?
Yeah, well, if you can imagine back in, I mean, the recordings, you know, our people spoke of, you know, the abundance of kai, and it was, I guess, back in those times, it would have been hard to hang on to places like this, where there was food, shellfish and fish and ducks and fowl and all sorts of things. So they were fed well, and the forest was really close. We would have been in the forest right now. You know, there would have been quite a strong, well, you know, you had to be a strong hapu to hang on, because otherwise, you know, your neighbour next door might get a little bit envious and come over and say, well, you know, want a bit of that or whatever. But it was recorded by some Pākehā tupuna, you know, that coming into Horeke, as we're looking out here now, you could see the bottom of the river tidal, and you could see fish, and it was compared to the Marlborough Sounds here. Would you believe it? You know, the edge of the waterways were covered in very tall mature kauri, you know, spoiled for a view from here, right through to the floodplains further up Waiho Valley. But it would have been an absolute Garden of Eden, really. If you know what a kauri tree looks like, well, if you can just put all those, you know, trunks right along the edge of the water here, right through to the top, and dense lowland forest of massive kaikatea and tarairea, pūrere, ducks on the river, eeling, just the abundance of this place would have been just incredible. You know, you didn't have to go very far for a feed.
Mita, your work, the work that you do now, I'm curious to know a little bit more about the type of work that you're involved in. Can you share with me some of the work that you're doing around some of the significant heritage places in the country?
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, one of the we do archaeological authority processing, so you know where people want to build. For instance, here, you know, if we wanted to put something, a monument or another whare up somewhere, you need to do an archaeological report on that specific place. So getting the specialist to have a look on the top and then beneath through LIDAR detection to see what's there, and maybe dig a hole meter by so deep and see what comes up. And after that, you've got a report, and then a decision's made. The consultation happens with our local hapu, and we basically make the decision to record and then build something on top of whatever was there. You know, if that's the decision that if hapu agree and it moves forward, so it's a rewarding role to have in that space, but it's also you're building on top of, well, anywhere in the country you're building on top of old archaeology. It's where once our people walked. You just can't help it, and people like to live close to the coastlines for the view and for the salt. So there's a lot of that happens. So some of the other stuff that offsets that is protecting some of the sites. If you look around here, I can see that there's a few sites that could possibly be listed and registered as sites of significance, so that they're on that list, and maybe they can move then into the district plan to be protected, in the district plan specifically. And if we just look over here, we've got Rafia, and you can see where the trees are more mature on this side than they are on that side. So there was a bit of an incident there. Going back a while now, because those trees have, those young ones have grown quite a bit. But it's where my Pākehā tūpuna was buried, Hake Mamani, or Jack Marmon, known back then. And he was, I think it was Scottish and Irish mix, red hair, piercing blue eyes, apparently. Yeah. And he used to be part of our tribe, Ngāti Hau, and he ran with Hongi Hika a lot on some of his raids further south, and he was classed as a tohunga Pākehā, and he resided in here. He lived over here, and he lived in Horeke as well, helped to build the Horeke pub, and he ended up being buried over there. And I think the story is they buried him upside down. They're that scared of him, so he used to come to church over here, believe it or not. And no one, apparently there's something written that when he walked into the church, no one would turn around to look who was coming in the door. That's how spooky he was. And we always knew when growing up, Boogeyman Jack. We knew him as Boogeyman Jack. That was right through here. So, and he lived to a good old age. But he had I think someone's written a book about him specifically. But he told his memoirs towards the end of his life here. So, he upset the pudding a little bit here during the signing of Te Tiriti by, telling some of the rangatiras not to sign. So he was a bit of an odd one out, but he was well respected as a tohunga. That's a Pākehā. So just sees our people, we're just different.
Yeah.
Maori. Yeah. some of the raids that he had they did in parts of Auckland and north of Auckland,
yeah.
They were normally sent in to look for their equivalent pākehā before they could take part in the battle. So he was part of that stuff here, and of course he had a uri, which there's a few of us that descend from him,
yeah.
Today. So.
Kia ora. I understand you're going to take me to a couple of locations nearby, and I'm just wondering why have you chosen these particular locations?
Well, they're on my site, and I think that I'm happy to share that stuff that's more on my site. I mean, if it were closer up the valley towards Whakarongorua, you'd need someone from Te Pōpoto to do that. But we could sort of shift over to the valley here, and we're just going to talk a little bit more about the Wesley and the Wetiriana mission station here. It got established here, but prior to coming in here, they were faced with a bit of a conflict up in Whangaroa. So. We'll see some places where they actually settled first in Waiho before they actually permanently settled here in Manganga.
Okay. I think that's a good time for us to head off. On our heading. Kia ora.
Kia ora. So this place here is Waipapa, the Waipapa River. It's part of, and it's on the edge of Pukati Forest. And just over this hill here is all Paupau. And then if you follow this ridge that we can see just up here, that high rata is right along to where those kauri rika are. And they continue up to a place called Te Timutimu. So, and then on this side here, if you had to go straight up, and over, you'd come onto a plateau, you'd be in closer to Mangamuka, I guess. Omahuta Forest. Yeah, and then the waters from Omahuta and Tangitu, Mangahorehore, Onikura, Moko, Whakaterekia, and further inland towards. Pukati on the eastern side. This basically is it, and it's on its way out to Hokianga, this main track of water.
Right now we're standing on the banks of the Waipapa River, a short distance inside the Pukati Forest, a ngahere rich in resources for our people. What was the connection hapū had here?
So this is a mixture of Ngāti Hau and Ngāti Toro, neighbours sort of up around in this area here. I guess in Waipapa here, it was they didn't have to go very far into the bush to access kai or any materials that they may have needed for building or waka or anything else like that. So more than likely it was a food source on the edge, a pathway to get over towards Ngāti Kahu, just on the other side here, which is, it'll take you, if we started out today, we'll probably by the end of the day, we start off early this morning, by the end of the day we would be in Whangaroa, walking through to a place called, from here, Waipapa, and up through to a place called Mangahorehore, and then Takapu Wahia, and then down to Omanu, which you'd end up in Kaiō itself.
Did you know this ngahere well?
Yeah, I used to hunt here. I used to hunt through here with possum control. So I worked with Doc for 15 years, and when I first started off, I worked right through Omahuta and Pukati Forest doing trapping. Yeah, a lot of trapping. So, yeah, I've walked most, if not all, of the areas. About 15,000 hectares.
Well, you grew up here and would have spent time in this ngahere and awa as a child. I feel the Māori here and sense you have a strong connection to this whenua. What does this place mean to you?
Centre of the universe here. Yeah. I mean, when we were younger, actually we were talking about this the other day, when we were younger, our grandmother, my mum's mother and father, we passed a house just on the open area before we got here, and We would go there every summer. We were lucky enough that our whānau, my siblings, to be up here longer than the other cousins, because they all went away, like a lot of Māori. You know, there's a massive exodus into the cities. But we stayed up here, and we spent a lot of time with our grandparents here. Blessed to have that. And we either swam on the bridge that we crossed, Whakanekeneke, or we swam here. So when we used to swim here, there was no one here. It wasn't a place where people came to sort of recreate, if you like. So we were the only whānau. So a whole bunch of us used to be down by the, just ahead of us, in front of us here, and panekeke, stew, plum jam, you know, blackberry pie, those sort of things that we've picked locally around here. That was the whole day. The creche was here for us. So there's fond memories, great memories of this place here for our particular whānau. But then as time moved on, it's become a great place for a lot of other different whānaus that have started to come here, especially from towards Horiki to Popoto and Motu Kiori, where they, you know, they just don't have rivers like this down their ways, and from Kaikohe. All Kaihau, so the surrounding districts there, they congregate here quite a lot, so which is awesome. You know, it brings them closer to nature, and plus we're it's a place where and again, every whānau, every hapu right throughout Te Mutu has a place to go where they need to rejuvenate. And I guess for our whānau, it's here, it's coming here, it's going over to Ōpaupau, going up to Tumutumu, walking up the back, you know, breathing it and smelling the, you know, the soils, picking up the leaf litter, those sorts of things, so to refresh, and then to go back into the busyness that life holds in the cities for our cousins that are still in the cities. And fortunately, myself and a lot of our siblings can just come here at will to rejuvenate. So most unfortunate that a lot have moved away from home, and they don't have this, you know, I'm tired, I've got to go somewhere to, you know, to pump it up again. So, you know, it's a once a year, lucky if it's twice a year thing. So, and every hapu has that same dilemma. Little that we know as Māori, these are the sort of places where we need to, you know, reconnect with, just to, you know, bring ourselves back down to the riverbed of things, you know, the root system, the leaf litter, all those sort of stuff, you know, sort of ground us again, and then go back into it again.
We're not far from Māngungu Mission House. What might have been the events happening for our tūpuna here in more recent times?
I guess going you know, a ways back to the time of Patuwini, when he was around, and his brother Tamati Wakanini. And of course we've just come from a place called Tarawaua, where we saw the kāinga, where they were brought up, where they were born and bred, not just themselves but many others. Ngāti Toro in that area there. And that's just off State Highway 1 before going north, before the Horiki turn-off. Significant area, Te Toke and Tarawaua. For Patuwini and them, I guess there's sort of one event that comes to mind is when Hongi Hika was running, battling in Ngāti Kahu. Massive stuff was happening up there, and you know, hearing stories from some of the older folk about those hapu from up there, Ngāti Pō, especially coming over to this side in tangi and hurt, and sort of asking and begging Patuwini to come over to help them to stop what was going on up there, and most reluctantly he agreed to do that. And of course, you know, where we are today, more than likely where we are today, because it seems to me to be the easiest route to go from home, which is on the side, through to Ngāti Kahu, is to follow this river up until you get to a place just below Onikura, Manga Horihori, which is, you know, approximately maybe 6 kilometres through the waterway up here. They did sleep a night or two here, on their way up there, and then they descended possibly around Ōmanu, if you're familiar with that area in Whangaroa. And the first people they came across was the Wesleyan Mission, and they had been sacked
from their mission station there, which there is a memorial on just off Omanu Road in Kyle. They were and should have been attacked by the tour that were accompanied with Patawini going north, but they weren't, and Patawini stopped that from happening and took them into his care, I guess, and made his way back with them and a few others through this way back towards where we've just come from, Tarawaua, and settled them there for a moment. And then from there they moved just a little bit further along State Highway 1 to a place called Te Toke, which is a turn off to Horeke, and settled them there for a bit. And then apparently they moved back to Tarawaua, and then from there a decision was made and negotiations of payment were made to the place that we've just visited this morning, Mangungu, and they permanently settled there in the end. So yeah, they would have walked through here all, you know, battered and bruised and hurt and crying with children and all that they could carry from the mission. That place was raided in Kyle, and had to build it all up again on this side. And when you're in Kyle, you know, you think about Hokianga and you're thinking about Opononi and those places out there. Well, in actual fact, you just need to look to the hills to the west at Kyle, and Hokianga's just over the brow, really.
A tupuna or ancestral ara through the Pukiti connects Hokianga te Whangaroa, two significant moana. These harbours are rich with history.
Yes, it's got to be said. You know, significant things happened at both harbours, and Ngāti Kahu hold those stories of, you know, it's a place of old, it's ancient, you know, that those people and their place, those surroundings, those landscapes, they're all ancient. You know, there's rocks that have been classified by GNS as being sort of around the same time as, you know, 3.5 billion years old, you know, which is, those are old formations. And in Māori tale, and Ngāti Kahu would tell this properly, is, you know, there's a linkage there with some of the legends, well, they could say legends, but some of the kōrero or whakapapa associated with those particular places. Well, how did they know they were 3.5 million years old? But they have stories to tell about that particular area and those associations of that, you know, that whole place, that whole kāinga.
I know there has been a lot of mahi done to ensure the forest is protected. What is happening here in Pukiti now to ensure the Māori of the forest remains intact?
Docs are doing what they do in the forest here, you know, be it Cody dieback or plant pest control or pest animal control, you know, species. There's a strong sense of doc in this time and now to, I guess, work more closely with hapū, so that the, you know, the aspirations of hapū kaitiakitanga can sort of start to sort of move into a bit of a, you know, 50 to 100 year plan that DOC could try and work out itself and then apply itself, and the hapū apply themselves to look after this place a bit better. I mean, the definition of conservation is different in all cultures, you know, how you look after the place. I mean, should we be living in the forest? You know, should there be a few that are kaitiaki who actually live in this forest? You know, it's those sort of things, you know, just doing things differently. You know, we've been hit by COVID, so anything is fair game from now on. You know, nothing's sacred in a sense sacred in a sense of how we operate, how we have operated, and how we will operate into the future.
You bring kaitiakitanga or guardianship into your work. Is that grounding for you?
Oh, yeah, it is. I think it's grounding for me. You know, I do come back here often, and not just here, further up towards Waiwanga. It's a sort of a place that I kind of go. It's around that sort of eastern area that I'm, you know, comfortable with. I'm comfortable down here, but I'm also comfortable at the top end. But it is that grounding. It's that a sense of responsibility of kaitiakitanga and faith, you know, the faith as well. That it's never, ever going to be lost unless you let it get lost, you know, you let it go. So it's a big sense of grounding for me to know what I know and to appreciate what we've got, that it's not squandered, that it's you know, raised into raised as the highest maunga that we have around here. You know, that just that sense of kaitiaka. It's hard to sort of put all that stuff to words, but it's just really putting it up there within your life and having that faith. And I believe that, you know, if you're that way inclined, your pathway shouldn't be too troubled necessarily. You know, it should only be greater and greater as you move through life, as you sort of climb towards where you need to be. Yeah, this scrambled words, scrambled description, but it's hard to explain that sort of stuff. It's a deep sense of things, isn't it, really? You know, it's something you'd die for. You know, you'd die for. You know, you literally die for. You'd rather give up your life first before this place. Yeah, yeah, you die for it.
What is your tohu or qualification to do this mahi?
Gosh, you know what, I worked for Doc for a lot of years. I just had a really strong pull towards working in the bush, and I loved it so much. You know, it was I had a lot of trouble with my own, I guess my own hapu and around pigeon, taking of pigeon, kukupa, you know, here in the north. I had a lot of, you know, it just wasn't working around education about sustainability and that sort of thing, and respecting this place for what it is. It's an awesome place, you know. It's alive, it's well, and if you treat it well enough, you know, it'll treat you well enough. And to getting that message across to our own people is quite difficult, and I struggled with it a bit. So there was a lot of compliance that I did around that front, and tried to sort of get us back into a space where we used to be, you know, where sustainability was the... Otherwise we starve, you know. But anyway, I suppose that for me, it moved from there into a lot of different areas of the organisation, and I built up a lot of skills in that space. And then beyond that point, I ended up with Heritage New Zealand 2010, and again, it was just, yeah, it just catapulted. And I was sort of, you know, pushing to explore new places where I could see a lot of gaps, you know, where the organisations weren't getting to. It was okay sort of to push some things, but, you know, before that you needed to explain yourself a little bit better and give a little bit of time to for that to be chewed over, you know, if you can use that word, chewed over. And yeah, but we all here for a purpose to do our bit, whether it's good or bad, you know, either doesn't matter. It is still to our wider. Nothing's ever perfect. You know, it's never as straight and peaceful as it should be. We've all got to have these challenges, you know, otherwise life would be too easy.
I runga I tērā kōrero ko te ao wairua, nō nā tō mahi ki āwhina tia te wairua kei roto tō tātou Ngāhere, he mahi rangatira tēnā mahi. Nā reira, me whakaoti ana tā tātou kōrero ki a Wainganui a mātou, tēnā rawa atu koe, he mihi atu ki a koe e mita.
Mihi atu ki a koe a hoa.